You're listening to the River East Church Podcast, a Jesus community for the world.
So bonjour everybody. Bonjour de mi magadu. Kanigam wei de kas namigo shendo dem ni benwen demo mayayin. Bonjour de mishom sak na komasak. Mija na gijik kaban. Miji na bekwe adonis. It's nice to be here. It's nice to be here with you. You guys are fun people. This is like, I did not expect so much joy this morning. Probably because I was stressed. I have like lots of notes here, so I want to make sure that I cover everything that I can. But I don't think I've been to many churches where I've seen lots of heckling of people. You have like the coolest interpretation of scripture, or I guess paraphrasing. I don't know sure what you'd say, Philip, but you were amazing. That was really, really good. I want you actually to come before all my talks, if you can, just say, Nigon's going to say this, all right? And then you're missing some na-na-nas, though, just for the record. Just your, there's the three nas, there's like four more na-nas in there, so. I got very emotional just a minute ago because my mom turned to me, my mom's here, and was with my dad, and my mom turns to me and she says, this is your grandmother's favorite song. And I was like, oh my God, this is what I needed is to, my grandma would be so proud of me that I'm doing this today, doing this work. I've been, I don't often do a sermon of a section in the Bible. So this is kind of a little bit outside my box, but I think part of when I was first challenged by this, by Marianne, I felt very excited because it's something I don't normally do. So it's something outside the box. It challenges me, and that's, I think, exciting. And so then, of course, and then word got out, and there's a lot of people here, my dad's friends, who are very close to him, of course, the Dick family, who I've known for way too long. for them, I'm sure, not for me. I'm very honored to be here. And I just want to give a shout out for Ed and Gerda, who are here, who are the matriarch of the Dick family, who are my neighbors when I was in Selkirk. And not only was Mr. Dick and Mrs. Dick wonderful supporters of me growing up, but Mr. Dick was my principal. And the real boss, Mrs. Dick, told me everything what to do. So the real boss, of course, we all know who's the charge of the family. To begin to talk a little bit about, you know, an Anishinaabe person coming to give a sermon about, I never expected for me to say, talk about, oh wonderful, thank you, wonderful. To talk about Acts, there's two things I want to say before I begin and talk about Stephen, because I think this is a fascinating story. The first one is this. It is not just a kind act or a relational building exercise to come here and speak with you today. There are two premises that I operate that are fundamental to my life that come both from my family and from my community. And when I say my family and community, I'm not just talking about Anishinaabe and Cree people, but those are some of my most seminal, most important teachings come from my father and my mother. But also it comes from my other father and my other mother, we are all in this together. It is my position, it is always of my central core teaching that we are in this together. We are the first place of treaty. We are the first province post-Confederation. We are the first place in which everything that we now know of as Canada is birthed here. And as much as those in towns that rhyme with the word Toronto think they are the center, let's all pray for the Jets, because if the Jets don't win, we're gonna have to watch Maple Leafs for like 36 hours a day going forward. That we are the first. And what I mean by that is that we have encountered, thought about, considered what it means to live together in this place. And so that what that means is that we have a tremendous path behind us, but far more importantly, this path in front of us is something that we have done. No one has taught us this, no one has told us this. We have done that through our experiences with each other, that every single person in this place is married to, lives beside, or is working with another person. And that comes from different walks of life, not just Indigenous and Canadian, but also newcomers, which come to us every single day from all these different walks of life that then become a part of our family. And treaty was meant to do that. we were meant to do these things, to live, to learn, to love each other. And so I think that's my first teaching of why I'm here today. I'm not here because I feel bad or I somehow think there should be reconciliation between the church and Indigenous peoples. I'm here because I am your relative, like, and I'm very proud that you would invite me to speak. So anytime I'm asked to speak by my relative, just like an auntie or an uncle or a cousin or a brother or a sister or a grandparent, I would do that. I would naturally come. I would come because I am your relative, as you are mine. Here's the second principle of why I'm here. It is my fundamental belief, absolutely, with every core of my being, I am not a Christian, but I am very deeply in love with Jesus. And that means that I've spent a lot of time thinking about Jesus. I've had some terrible experiences growing up as an Indigenous person, a very acrimonious relationship with the church, which has, I think, in many ways disfigured and mutated and influenced many times negatively my sense of Jesus. But as I've gotten older, I've realized that Jesus would wear an orange shirt if you gave it to him. Jesus would wear that orange shirt that says every child matters, because his entire life was built on the premise that everyone matters. And that through love, that is the central teaching of who we fundamentally are as humanity, as members of creation, both human and non-human, as members of this universe. The biggest teaching that we really have to give one another is time. That's what we really have, these little moment of time, which is where that asema comes from. As Anishinaabe people, this is how we recognize time. We recognize time by offering asema, which is the teaching of how we grow and foster a tiny seed, the tiniest little seed that looks this big, to become this massive being in our lives. And through blood, sweat, tears, you grow that tobacco, dry it in your house, and then you offer it to someone. That's what tobacco does. It teaches you about time. And so if I could return to my grandmother for just a minute, my mom turned to me and said, this is your grandmother's favorite song. Of course, then I started crying because my grandmother, my French-Canadian grandmother, who is from the Paw, really amazing, beautiful woman who taught me really about what love of the church means. I can feel her here today. And I didn't realize that she would be here. And then my mom told me about this song. So I tried not to choke up. I had a little tear over there, mostly thinking about my grandmother. that brings us to the teaching of the eagle. You know, why is it that we're talking about eagles today? Well, eagles, for Anishinaabe people, are the great teachers of creation. Because the word in our language we use is migazi, which means the highest flyer, or that which soars, is really the word for soaring. Now, eagles do two things, and I could spend the rest of my 15 minutes here talking about eagles, but I'll tell you two things about eagles. Here's the first thing. Eagles fly the highest in the sky. When you go the highest in the sky, and you would know this by being in a plane or being in a tall building, when you look down, you don't see difference. You actually can't tell the difference often between human and non. You are like, is that a bear or is that a person? Or is that a road or is that a river? You know, you have trouble identifying the differences between things. And that means that you have to have a broad perspective. You have to think not in terms of development and undeveloped or human and non. You have to think about things collectively. And that's why we put those eagle feathers in our leaders' headdresses, because what we're asking our leaders to do is to think about the most. Think about everyone. Think of the broadest sense you can possibly be. Now, here's the second teaching of the eagle. Eagles have feathers, and we have a feather here. If you have a feather, and I can see one over there, I can see, take a feather, and you'll notice that when a feather is uncared for, when you don't spend time with it, and particularly if it gets damaged in some way, let's say a book falls on it or falls to the floor and someone steps on it with something or other, the filaments will separate, and they'll look like this. Now, we are taught that we must spend time with our feathers when we are offered a feather from an eagle. And so you must care for that eagle. You must care for that eagle feather. And one of the amazing things about eagle feathers is they live forever, because the oil in the filaments, in the spine of the feather, spreads to the filaments. And if you spread that oil, the feathers come together. If you show kindness and consideration and you speak with that feather, the feathers, filaments will come together, which is how an eagle repairs itself, how an eagle cares for it, and most importantly, how eagles care for other eagles. You'll see that eagles rub up against other eagles if they've crashed and gotten wet. And so what is the teaching there? The teaching is that if an eagle is going to fly to see no difference, to see collectivity, to see the biggest, broadest view of the world, that feather, that kindness, that generosity must be present to form connection. And that brings me to Stephen. Now, I'm not going to pretend like I can give you the entirety of Acts 6 and 7, but I can tell you this, that I've read it over now, 700 times, and I've watched many YouTube videos. You Christians like to really analyze a lot of things and think of a lot of perspectives. And I think that's where we begin, because I started getting caught up in a whole bunch of different words, like, for example, Philip's interpretation of understanding that what led to the whole rise of Stephen in the first place. There's this word that many Christians will use to interpret, and it's the word murmur. I don't know if you've read that, Philip, or the word murmur seems to be, you often use with many Christians. It's not in your Bible, however, so I won't get too caught up in it. But the rise of Stephen comes from an us and them problem. Now, all of us live in societies in which some are us and some are them. In fact, we live in a whole world of that. Oftentimes, us means our partner, our children, our family, our community, our nation. We are, in fact, I'll say, suffering through an us and them problem with a certain orange being to the south of us. That when we promote selfishness, individuality, and capitalism, we often more often get those things. We get that us versus them mentality. And of course, do not wag our finger and think that we are somehow better on the north part of that medicine line, because we also have a deep issue of us and them, and that's why you're wearing that red shirt today, is that certain people have been labeled them, they mean less, they don't matter, and we use terms like feasible when we describe their remains. We say, oh, they don't matter, we don't need to go find them. And it only took 87 days, and really pennies when you think about it, in terms of the economy of this country, to look for them, to find them in that landfill. And that means that all of us are better now for having that having been done, and that we as Manitobans chose that. We chose that Indigenous women mattered. Not all of us did, but because we did choose that, we are better as a result. We are a better community because we chose the brave, crazy idea that Indigenous women and girls matter. And I think that Stephen is chosen out of that principle, is that the the disciples are seeking, how can I bridge this us versus them mentality? How can I connect people? And I think it's significant that what inspires the us versus them dialogue is two things. One is the treatment of women, and second is food. And I think that it's very important when we're talking about those who have been left behind by society, and it ended up going down a black hole of research into Hellenist widows. And so I think this is a really fascinating, I don't want to get too deep into my research here, but what we're really talking about is women who have been at the fringes of society or treated the worst by society simply because their husbands, their families, their nations speak a different language. But ultimately, the people are the same. They are both Jews, but yet one group of people has been denoted because of their language, culture, experience, geography, identity, as being lesser than, and they were receiving less food as a result. And it's powerfully that Stephen is chosen to bridge this divide. And who chooses Stephen? The people. This is very significant, and I think that this is something that tells me quite beautifully and importantly that you cannot ever fix problems for others, that others, what others ask you to do is to stand beside them, to not tell them what to do. And I think that this is a profound teaching I learned when I was in Sri Lanka. I worked with widows in Sri Lanka from the Civil War, whose husbands, brothers, fathers were killed in the northern part of the country. And back in 1997, when I was a young person and I worked for the Canadian International Development Agency, they had me going to communities to build rotating bank loan programs for young women. And the number one thing I heard from young women was, "We don't really need you, but we would like your money. We don't need you to tell us how to build our farms. We don't need you to tell us how to run our families. We don't need you to tell us what it is that we need to do to recover from this horrible tragedy of a civil war. But we would like you to sit and have food with us, to share time, and most importantly, visit, laugh with us." And that's what Stephen does. I mean, Stephen is this, ultimately, a storyteller. And I know it gets very uncomfortable when we talk about what is the true story of Jesus, which Stephen certainly has a lot of passion about. In fact, Stephen is killed for this story. But ultimately, Christianity, if I were to identify it globally, is really a series of conversations around Jesus and perspectives. And I'm not telling you it doesn't come with a whole lot of blood, because it does. But for those of us on the outside looking at Christians, I'm reminded of Pope Francis, who asks us, are we really competitors? Do we have to be split amongst humanity? Or can we look to the teachings of Jesus, which tell us the central core belief of love, generosity, and believing in the person beside you? It was Jesus who washed feet. It was Jesus who said, love the person beside you. It was Jesus who said, why can't we all get along? And that ultimately, at the end of it, all we really have to share with one another is time. That tobacco might be a great teacher of you, of Jesus. The eagle might be a teacher for you of Jesus. Because I can't think of nobody who brings people together with kindness, with generosity, with stories, than Jesus. In fact, an eagle is perhaps the most perfect way to describe Jesus. And most importantly, that when you are hurt, when you feel the separateness, when you feel tempted by individuality, capitalism, competitiveness, you might be better served to think about the stories that bring us together, and those stories of love that we are hearing about today, that you can laugh together, that you can do na-na-na together. And that this place, you don't need to abandon this place simply because Christians have deep opposition, sometimes wars over who is Jesus. In fact, you have to double down on this place. Spend more time at this place than ever. And I would say that I want you, I ask you, I hope you will, double down on Jesus now. You know, it's the hardest time in the world when we have an environment that is collapsing around us, that we have an economy that is struggling, and most importantly, that we're being encouraged to turn on each other and often blame those people who have nothing to do, but that we fabricate and make stories about, blaming for a failing economy and a failing environment. We say, oh, if we just have to pay for those people up north, for the hotels when they get flooded out or forest fire, we could do more potholes. Or, oh, those people over there, they're anti-economy because they have this audacity of believing in bears and they don't want to have a pipeline go over and kill all the bears. It's not about blaming anyone. It's about going, well, why do we need those things in the first place? Why is it that we have to continually and consistently fight amongst ourselves when ultimately the teaching of creation and the eagle, yes, the eagle kills. Yes, the eagle sometimes isn't always perfect. But you know what the eagle always teaches us? Love. Even when the eagle is eating that fish or hunting, at the end of the day, that eagle is going to pass and is going to become the food of the being that she just consumed. And so that tells you something around Anishinaabe, but also tells you something that Jesus was trying to get to, which is that creation may be ugly, but creation always bends towards love. Always. Consistently, continually, eternally. That's the great teaching. And do us as humans want to go with that flow or against that flow? And Stephen says, let us go with that flow. Let us go with the teachings of Jesus, and that teaching of Jesus leads us towards love. It doesn't teach us about this house that we say is the most sacred. It's not about the material, it's about how do we treat each other. Now, Stephen, I would like to call, is an artist. Nowadays, we might call him a late-night talk show host, because he is telling truth bombs, truth, painful truths. In fact, into my research a bit more, he actually says in some interpretations of the Bible, he calls the court that he's in front of full of uncircumcised ears, which I think is the biggest insult you could possibly give to somebody. Like, I want to use that. That sounds amazing. I'm going to use that in my, when I'm fighting with colleagues at U of M, I'm going to be like, you know what the problem with your ears are? You know? So, I mean, me guetch for that. Like, what a treat it was to read Stephen. Stephen's pretty sassy. He's very sassy. Reminds me of a certain guy that I used to know who passed away in November, my father. One sassy guy. Now, Stephen is an artist, and what is he killed for? He's killed for his art. He's killed for his story. He's killed because he's passionate in his belief that Jesus is teaching us to bend towards love, that creation is full of love. And I think that we might want to remember that when we tell each other stories, when we tell each other, invite each other, think and spend time with each other, that we don't always have to vote the same way, we don't have to think the same way, as we definitely don't have to have the same identities, sexualities, way we dress. But the most important thing is that Stephen's reminding us is that we're all in this together. And we might be best served by those teachings that bring us together, that don't result in the killing of individuals who are trying to tell us other stories, which is what he says. You have killed other prophets. And therefore, we need to not keep killing. And so that when Stephen is killed for his story, he calls out, do not kill them for killing the storyteller. Because we need more storytellers. We need to not see storytellers as the enemy. We need to see storytellers as the most powerful and significant beings in creation. And if we look to our relatives in the South, that might be a big teaching now too. Artists give us visions. And so I want to give you one vision to end off for today, and it's around food. You know, what started this whole struggle in the first place, but it's about me, Jim, or food is what we use in the language. But the word me, Jim that we use when we say food, it actually means this. It means coming together. It's significant that in almost all of Jesus's major teachings, it's around food. You ever notice that? It's almost always what we call, what you guys call, I looked it up, or I saw it. I keep seeing this term, it's table fellowship. That's what I... And I think that that's very significant because that's very Anishinaabe. Like, it is amazing how many times you, if you're reading the Bible, like, for instance, Jesus is bringing the disciple back into, this is after the resurrection, and he's spending time with the disciples. They're walking back into Galilee. And he says, listen to the rocks. You can hear them singing. And I'm like, that's Anishinaabe, is what that is. And go to a sweat lodge. That's what we sing when the rocks have that steam on there. The rocks are singing. But it's significant that food is the teaching here. Food is the instigating factor for what leads us to Stephen, that great story. You know, the visions of food in this city are of critical importance. It is food that is our most important alongside water. Those two resources are ultimately what will determine our future, because it really doesn't matter if we reconcile or follow the 94 calls to action. If we don't have food or water, there's no point. In fact, creation will continue without us, and creation will not actually be that worse off, probably better off sometimes, because if humans aren't here, they're, you know, we saw during the pandemic that it starts to recover, the natural world starts to recover, species start coming back, et cetera, et cetera. So we might be best served to think of food and water as the most central part of what is a struggle for us to maintain ourselves and to continue into the future. Now, there's two different ways to see food. One is a vision that divides us, which is what's provided in the story, which is that people who are the same, both Jews, that simply because they speak different, act different, look different, that one side gets food and the other one doesn't. that people look out for themselves. We can use food to determine wealth, the have and the have-nots. Another word for this is called the mall. Go to the mall, you'll see that there are people who belong there, those who have wealth, and those who don't belong there, those who don't have wealth. What I'm often talking about is our relatives who are often deemed homeless or in poverty, and almost unilaterally in this community, that's Indigenous. That's my people, that's my relatives. Also, your relatives, your people. These are the people who, there is a reason that you are here, and it always begins with a conversation about Indigenous peoples. The reason that you are here is because of Indigenous relatives who have invited your families, your ancestors, and in many cases, your own self into this place. And it's no coincidence that they are the ones who are most often not welcome at the mall. Just go watch the security. Watch the way people are treated in stores. Watch the way that even there's even signs up, no loitering. Who are they really talking about? I guess who? And that means that food is this big indication of wealth. And how do we share that wealth? Well, there's two different ways that we share wealth in the north end of Winnipeg, the place of ground zero of poverty, but also ground zero of reconciliation in this country. The first is we can missionize. And I had this experience in the 1990s when I first started doing frontline poverty work. And I worked with an organization that was a mission organization, because in those days, nobody else was funded. The only organizations that were funded were mostly Christian-based organizations who would do things like make people line up for hours to get a sandwich. And before they got that sandwich, they had to hear a sermon. I don't know if you heard your song recently, but that is not freeing from oppression. That is the epitome of oppression, is to force a people who are starving to experience more starving, more a time, something that they otherwise are at mercy to experience. And if the power of the word is so powerful, if the power of Jesus is about love, then maybe we should start with love, which is that if people are hungry, we feed them first. And then we talk to them about Jesus. And if they want to stay, great. In fact, I think they will stay because they will see that it begins with love. There's a second way that food divides us or brings us together, and it is through my experience in the Mama Bear Clan. With the Mama Bear Clan, it's an Indigenous-led movement in which we bring food to people. Instead of having people wait in line, we go to encampments, places where people are. We go to families' homes where they're coming home from 2 to 3 jobs of working. We go and specifically look for newcomers who are coming from Ukraine, who are coming from Syria. And then we go to them. Instead of expecting people to come to us, we bring love to others. And the first thing we always say is when we offer a sandwich is that we love you. You are seen. And most importantly, that we'll be there next week. And people depend and rely upon us. And during the pandemic, I was proud to say that we continued our work all 3 years, putting ourselves at risk, but most importantly, saying that this is something we have to do, not because just for the sandwich, but because we want people to know that we're there, that there's someone who's thinking about them, that they are seen. And that might be the biggest message of wealth today, which is that it's not your job to give X number of dollars. It's not your job to go out always and do take it all upon yourself. In fact, that's the teaching of why we choose 7 while others deliver the word of God. We have to spread out that work. We have to also give other people the opportunity to experience that work. But when we do that work, we have to dedicate ourselves in our time, and we have to stand with people. We don't tell people, this is the 7. We say, what are the 7 that you choose? And when we stand with them, we truly stand with them. We don't expect them to hear words before we give them a sandwich. We give them a sandwich first. We give them our time first. We give them our love first. And that by giving them our love, we truly encapsulate a belief that we love our neighbor and that they matter. And that when we put on those shirts, whether it be red or whether it be orange, when we say every child matters, we actually do it. Not through expectation, not through demands, but through the central premise that we're all in this together. If we truly are all in this together, that means the person beside you is the most important person in your life but so is the person on the other side of the church, and the person out on the street who's not going to come in this building, and the person who votes differently than you, looks differently than you, has a different sexuality than you. And we have to double down, not just on Jesus, but on them too, because it is one and the same. So with that, I say a big miigwech and thank you for your time for today.
Thanks for listening to the River East Church podcast, the Jesus community for the world. We are an Anabaptist church pursuing wisdom, prophecy, and compassion here in Winnipeg, Manitoba. If you'd like to learn more about us, you can find us online at rivereastchurch.ca. We hope you join us for next time, and until then, may grace and peace be with you.